On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The White House hates to say it, but from Mexico to Argentina, it's the word. As George Bush flies south today to Latin America, the U.S. president is, in effect, going nose-to-nose, mano-a-mano, with Venezuela's fiery, oil-rich, populist President Hugo Chavez. While Bush tours five Latin American nations, Chavez will mount his own tour. When Bush arrives in Montevideo, Uruguay, Chavez will be pumping up a big anti-Bush rally across the river in Buenos Aires, Argentina, with the Argentine president at his side. Bush is announcing hundreds of millions in aid. Chavez is ladling out billions. Up next on Point, Bush and Chavez fighting over the future of Latin America. We're going to hear some great voices from around the region in this hour. But first, the first stop on President Bush's Latin America tour is Sao Paulo, Brazil. Joining me now from Sao Paulo is Richard Lapper, Latin America editor for the Financial Times. He's covered the region since the early 80s. Richard Lapper, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks very much.
So you're writing in the Financial Times today that Bush has got some lost time to make up for, that his credibility south of the Rio Grande, and you mean all the way south, I guess, is in tatters. What is President Bush's challenge on this tour, Richard Lapper?
Well, it's a big question. You know, the U.S. has been losing influence, really, in Latin America for some time now, and things have, no doubt about it, they've been quite bad under this presidency. You know, George Bush started off his first term with promises to look south and restore, you know, a good relation with his neighbors. It didn't quite work out like that. He lost that as a priority. It fell away very, very quickly after 9/11. I think the U.S. made a number of policy mistakes in the immediate years, the first couple of years of Bush's presidency, and anti-Americanism in the region has been growing slowly. Wouldn't want to exaggerate that. You know, Chavez and Venezuela is part of that story. It's not all the story, but definitely there's a sense in which Latin America is increasingly going its own way and not as dependent, perhaps, as it once was on the United States.
I think there's a temptation in the United States, despite Venezuela's new oil wealth, to see Hugo Chavez as a kind of joker. But he's got billions behind him, and he's been working hard to raise his profile and influence in the region. What's his appeal, and where is it strongest, Richard Lapper?
Well, I think, you know, his appeal is based on the farm. Two things, really. First of all, he has a huge amount of money. You know, Venezuela's sitting on reserves of over $50 billion. The oil price has more or less quadrupled since Hugo Chavez first came to office in an election in 1998. And I think that Chavez has been prepared to spend that money quite liberally to increase his influence in the region, offering credit to people to buy oil, cheap credit to buy his oil, offering help for social programs. And that brings me on to the second element of Chavez's appeal, which is really that he's prioritized spending in areas like primary health care, where there are, to be fair, dire necessities in Latin America, particularly in the poorer and more marginal countries. You know, and it's quite interesting that Chavez's allies have won power in Bolivia, Ecuador, and Nicaragua over the course of the last year, 15 months. And those countries are some of the poorest in the hemisphere. I think his appeal is based on oil and his money, and B, his preparedness to spend that money on projects that benefit the 25% of people, as George Bush himself pointed out in a speech on Monday, 25% of people in Latin America that are living on less than $2 a day. And those are the people really to whom Chavez's appeal is aimed.
President Bush raising these social issues himself in speeches and comments this week in advance of this tour, after a long time when the United States was, I think, identified first and foremost in Latin America with globalization, free markets, free trade, and all the rest. Are there now competing worldviews between these men that, that Latin Americans tend to see as poles in some kind of debate, Richard?
I think to some extent there is that element. I mean, you know, in the 1990s, the U.S. Based its policy towards Latin America really around three priorities. One was to fight the drugs trade in Colombia, huge domestic concern, of course, in the United States, and Colombia the source of most cocaine that comes into the U.S. Secondly, and particularly since 9/11, security, but also underpinning the approach has been an interest in trying to develop free trade. You know, it's been one of the axioms, really, of globalization, that freer trade benefits everybody. And the U.S. has pushed ahead in terms of negotiating free trade agreements with Mexico and Central America and Chile. And it's I think there's been an assumption that that would automatically lead to prosperity, a general prosperity across the region. And two things have happened, really. First of all, that push towards free trade has broken down, not just because of resistance in Latin America, but also clearly because of resistance amongst certain groups in the United States, like American farmers, for example.
Mm.
And secondly, the benefits of the free trade that has been established have not flowed evenly in Latin America. And, you know, in particular, the problem of this very large group of people who are excluded from the formal economy have not got any better, really. There's been some reduction in poverty levels, but it's really not enough to make one feel confident that this is the right approach.
And
so I think what we're seeing now is an attempt to introduce social policy, welfare, back into the equation by the United States. It's quite timid, though. That's part of the problem. It's not really, we're not seeing President Bush mentioned the Alliance for Progress of 1961, JFK's very famous and very, very big initiative, where the U.S. talked about spending billions of dollars in Latin America to improve its levels of social welfare and infrastructure and so on. We're not talking about that. The political conditions in the United States are not right for that kind of initiative. They're just not there. And I think that's kind of the problem. There is a recognition that the U.S. needs to answer Chavez's appeal on the social front. It's not really clear at this point what they can do, short of the collection of initiatives that have been announced this week.
And meanwhile, Hugo Chavez ladling it out by the billions in Latin America. Richard Lapper, stand by in Brazil for a moment, if you would. I want to go to Bogota, Colombia, and Daniel Garcia Pena, professor of history at the National University of Colombia. Professor Garcia Pena, thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
So here we are. George Bush is headed down your way, five nations on his tour. Hugo Chavez sort of impishly mounting a tour at the same time. How would you assess if there's a contest between these men and their worldviews, who's in the lead?
No, I think there's no doubt that there are two worldviews that are being presented, and that at least at this moment, I think there's no doubt that Chavez has been able to very intelligently pick up on on one side the collapse of the market reforms that were mentioned just a few minutes ago. The fact is that there is a huge disillusionment with during the 90s was promised as the salvation, as the way that the Colombian and the Latin American economies could come out of underdevelopment. But in fact, what we have seen is a growing disparities, growing disequalities, and growing poverty. So I think that is what Chavez has really been able to pick up on. The money, of course, is important in countries like Bolivia and Ecuador, but I think that maybe in other countries like Brazil or even Colombia, the money element is a bit secondary, and it has much more to do with those two confronting models, those two worldviews that Chavez and Bush represent.
Do you think it's more than just the Venezuelan billions? Do the others really want to become, what does Hugo Chavez call it, new Bolivarians?
Yeah, it has a lot to do with, in the case of Colombia, for example, there is no, the Venezuelan markets are much more important than the petrodollars. In fact, for a long time, Venezuela has been the prime source of divisas of exports for Colombian products. Even more important, in fact, in the U.S., even though in general terms, we export more to the United States. The nature of the things we export to Venezuela, which are small manufacturing goods, employ a lot more Colombians in these activities. So the economic aspect with Venezuela is a bit more complex than simply a matter of needing his petrodollars.
Richard Lapper in Brazil, we've just got you for another minute. What do you see as at stake for the U.S. in this sort of battle for hearts and minds and worldview here as President Bush hits the road?
Well, I think I'd just like to say one thing about Chavez's influence. I think we have to be pretty clear that Chavez's influence in the bigger, more sophisticated economies and policies of the region in Brazil, Mexico, Argentina, Colombia, Chile, it's not that great, right? I mean, Chavez is really influencing in the smaller, weaker countries that the Caribbean Basin, Central America, some of the poorer Andean countries.
Richard Lapper, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks very much.
I want to listen right now to a little bit from President Bush himself, acknowledging a kind of new day and new emphasis here. On Monday, speaking in Washington before the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce in advance of his tour, announcing what amounts to a new policy emphasis toward Latin America, one focused not only on trade deals, but a focus here on social problems.
I want to talk about another important priority for our country, and that is helping our neighbors to the south of us build a better and productive life. On Thursday, Laura and I are going to leave on a trip that will take us to Brazil and Uruguay and Colombia, and Guatemala, and por fin Mexico. These are countries that are part of a region that has made great strides toward freedom and prosperity. They've raised up new democracies. They've enhanced and undertaken fiscal policies that bring stability. Yet despite the advances, tens of millions in our hemisphere remain stuck in poverty and shut off from the promises of the new century. My message to those trabajadores y campesinos is you have a friend in the United States of America. We care about your plight.
President Bush on Monday in Washington, rolling out his Espanol there for the trabajadores and campesinos. You've got a friend in Washington, he says. Let's look at that. Daniel Garcia Pena is with us from Bogota. Peter Hakam joins us now from Washington. He's president of Inter-American Dialogue, a Washington think tank focused on the hemisphere there. Peter Hakam, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Jose Carreño. He is Washington correspondent for top Mexican daily La Universal. Jose Carreño, thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
So let me go first to you, Jose. When President Bush says, reaches out in his speech to trabajadores and campesinos and says you've got a friend in the USA, how does that resonate in Mexico and point south?
Let me put it this way. It sounds a bit hollow. He's saying that, whereas at the same time the immigration policies are still very restrictive, and the immigration rhetoric that is coming out not from the administration but from his own party is very hard. At the same time, I don't think that I'm saying anything untoward if I say that the United States have a traditional problem of image in Latin America. And that this specific government, President Bush government, has a credibility problem, not only in Latin America, but here. So I do not believe that his words resonate very much.
Peter Hakam, in Washington, the former Mexican foreign minister, Jorge Castaneda, wrote this week in the Washington Post that whatever the White House says, this tour of President Bush's is in no small part about Chavez containment. Richard Lapper said at the same time from Brazil with us just now that, you've got Bush, you've got Chavez, but many countries in Latin America are going their own way here. How do you see the big dynamics and who's deciding to lean what way? What's the big dynamic here, Peter?
Well, I mean, I think it's a mistake to try to find one big dynamic in this. I think that this has been tried before. First, let me just say, I think that what I've been hearing is a little too much focus on Hugo Chavez. Clearly, the U.S. has immense problems in Latin America, but virtually all of those problems are, first of all, made largely in the good old U.S. of A. It wasn't Chavez. Chavez has almost nothing to do with U.S. migration debates, U.S. policy on migration. Chavez has nothing to do with our large U.S. agricultural subsidies. It has nothing to do with our policies toward Cuba. Has nothing to do with the lack of generosity and lack of flexibility in our trade agreements, the rigidity in our anti-drug program. So, in other words, Chavez has really been able to take advantage of a lot, but frankly, it's been made in the USA the problems. And what's most ironic about that, Tom, is that most countries of the hemisphere really want good relations with the United States. Most of the countries want to sign free trade agreements with the United States, even if they are ungenerous, because they know they're better off with those agreements than without them. So you already have 10, 12 agreements already signed, and some are ready to be approved now. Others have been approved. And even those countries that have allied themselves with Chavez, like Bolivia and Ecuador, have been lobbying in Washington to keep trade preferences with the United States. The United States, it shouldn't be so hard for the United States to come up with a policy, in fact, that makes those countries want to be closer to the United States, that wants to collaborate and participate with the United States. They show every indication, and the U.S. just hasn't been thinking for the past 5 or 6 years. And I think it shouldn't be too hard. I don't think that President Bush's speech before his trip is going to make much of an impression on the region, because it is so disconnected, no strategy behind it at all, and it's rather limited resources behind it. But it shouldn't be hard for a country as wealthy as the United States to make a difference in Latin America. We've just sort of haven't been on the ball for the past 4 or 5 years. We just have been largely indifferent to the region. Chavez has taken advantage of it.
Of course, just because something shouldn't be hard doesn't mean it will get done. Daniel Garcia Pena in Bogota, how do you see this? I mean, we're hearing from Richard Lapper and now from Peter Haykem. Look, there's a lot of nuance here. Latin American nations have learned a lot about the power of markets and the power of economic growth that can come from them. At the same time, Chavez has got billions, and he's getting a good reception in a bunch of countries. Do you see this as just the U.S. Making problems for itself, or is there another way of looking at the world that's really gaining strength here?
No, I think that there's no doubt that the United States, as Peter was saying, it is, has cooked its own problems, because in many regions, in many countries like Colombia, it has generated a lot of disillusionment right now with the expectations of the free trade agreement that President Bush has already announced is going to be very difficult to get through Congress, because the negotiation itself showed that the U.S. is a very difficult market to access. The U.S. was not willing to put the farm subsidies on the table, which makes it very difficult for Colombian and Latin American agriculture to compete. And so let's say that there was the view that the U.S. was not willing to give Colombia or Latin America the importance, the strategic importance that it deserves. And as far as the words of this new shift towards the social aspect, it generates a lot of skepticism, at least in Colombia, where the other ingredient is the military aid, not only the trade policy, but the fact is that the U.S. Aid in the last years has been primarily military.
And largely to Colombia for the drug war.
For the drug war. That's right. And although there was talk, in fact, some Democrats have talked about shifting today the equation is 80% military, 20% social spending. The hope would be that that social component would increase and decrease the military aspect. What we have seen in the bill, the proposal that Bush has presented to Congress thus far, he maintains the 80-20 proportions. So we see a lot of rhetoric that I'm afraid is a little too late.
But let me ask you about Chavez himself. He clearly has billions to offer, and he's pushing a lot of those around. He's got a kind of anger at the downside of globalization and old resentments in Latin America that he speaks to rather effectively. But is he really seen as offering a new way? You know, it's often described in America as a kind of mishmash of petrodollars and outmoded socialism that couldn't live without the oil wells. How is he seen at the level of, you know, sort of social program, economic program? Is he a light or just a voice?
I think that I agree with I think it was Peter that said that you can't center exclusively or focus exclusively on the figure of Chavez. Latin America is very diverse. Each country is producing different reactions to the globalization. And even though there are similarities between Evo Morales in Bolivia or Correa in Ecuador, they're very different. And I think that the Chavez model as such is cannot be exported from one country to the other. On the contrary, though, there is this view that he is promoting, that Latin America must come together, that we must give priority to the union of Latin American nations rather than to continue to be dependent upon the United States. And in that sense, Chavez does definitely strike a chord. And even though he is very different from presidents like Lula in Brazil or Tabaré Vázquez in Uruguay, where President Bush will visit, in that sense, in the priority that these governments have given to Latin America and to the need for more unity amongst us, there's no doubt that Chavez is much more in sync with what Latin America is thinking than the proposal that President Bush may bring.
Let me take a call from Boston. And Richard. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think my perspective really is one from outside of the U.S. Mm-hmm. I'm a doctoral student here, but from mm-hmm. the U.K., and I find the media analysis of this kind of possible head-to-head between Bush and Chavez quite interesting. It seems to me that the mainstream media, if Bush has states an intention to help Latin America and fund social programs and so on, he's immediately taken at face value by the majority of mainstream media. But when Chavez not only says that he'll do this, but actually has a record of having done this, he's treated as if he has some kind of ulterior motive. Now, that might well be the case, but I just find the bifurcation between the mainstream media stances towards these two figures to be quite interesting.
Yeah, I don't know if we're representing that here today. I mean, good on him if he shares the wealth. A lot of people can use it. But he also does come with a worldview, doesn't he, Richard? I mean, it's not the same as the view out of Washington.
Well, I just think that the overall media coverage between the two, there just seems to be a very large difference between the two. So it might well be the case that what Chavez is doing is part of some kind of master plan, for instance, to gain more personal control in the region and so on. But I just think that there's a huge difference between the way mainstream media will guess at his intentions, whereas it seems often cases they'll be giving Bush the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, Richard, we've got it. We're trying not to guess here today, but really to ask, and we'll do more of that asking. Thanks for your call. Daniel, I'll put the question to you then in Bogota. When you follow the American conversation about Latin America, does it seem tuned in to what's going on in your continent?
No. Unfortunately, I think that the events after 9/11, the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and the Middle East have had such a important weight on not only the attention of public opinion, but on the authorities and the leaders in the United States that they continue to look at Latin America in very stereotype and very simplistic terms and lose sight of the diversity, the broader picture of this going on. And I think that this is a bit what President Bush is beginning to realize, as I said, a little bit too late, given the fact that his administration is in the last leg. But I think it is evident that the perception in the region is that the U.S. Long ago stop looking at the region as it did in the past. And in fact, on issues like migration, the idea of building a wall to separate Mexico from the United States, and these messages have been very, very negative. And I think have today the level of let's say reactions against the United States are probably at an all-time high.
Peter Hakim, how do you read the agenda of Bush's tour here? Why these nations in particular? Brazil, Uruguay, Colombia, Guatemala, and as the president says, por fin, Mexico.
Well, you know, I'm not sure I know precisely what the president's thinking are, but he's certainly chosen five countries where he will be welcomed, five countries where there's good relations, enormous goodwill. He's also chosen two countries that clearly have governments of the left and three other countries who have center-rightist governments. The notion here that it doesn't really matter, left, right, center. What matters is the quality of governance and the quality of the relationship with the United States. I think you can go country by country and see why each of the stops he's going to make is important for the United States. Brazil is pretty easy. It's the big guy in South America. It's and South America is where Hugo Chavez's influence is the strongest. And Brazil, while very friendly with Chavez, cooperative with Chavez, maintains also good relations with the United States, good political relations, good economic relations. They've managed over many years, the United States and Brazil, to avoid any adversarial relationship despite many differences. And Bush can expect in Brazil a good big abraço, a big hug, and probably some good barbecue. And going to Uruguay, that's one country where the U.S. recently signed an investment agreement. They've been talking productively about the possibility of closer economic relations.
The last time President Bush was down this way, Hugo Chavez spoke to a crowd of thousands at the Summit of the Americas conference 2 years ago, Mar del Plata, Argentina. He attacked the Bush administration and the free trade agreement there. NPR's Julie McCarthy translates.
Una pala de enterrador.
Each of us has brought a shovel, he told the boisterous crowd that crossed national borders and socioeconomic divides. We are grave diggers here in Mar del Plata, Chavez said, and we will bury the free trade agreement in its tomb. Fascist Bush, you are the terrorist, they chanted, interrupting Chavez's story about a conversation with Fidel Castro, who called him on the way into the stadium.
But this week, prepping for this tour, George Bush is not talking just free trade. He's saying in a speech this week that there is a new emphasis, not only on trade deals, but on social programs.
The working poor of Latin America need change, and the United States of America is committed to that change. It is in our national interest. It is in the interest of the United States of America to help the people in democracies in our neighborhood succeed. When our neighbors are prosperous and peaceful, it means better opportunities and more security for our own people. When there are jobs in our neighborhood, people are able to find work at home and not have to migrate to our country. When millions are freed from poverty, societies are stronger and more hopeful.
President Bush, this week, getting ready to fly south. Let's listen to our listeners. Jorge is calling from Boston. Jorge, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Hello, sir. What do you know?
Yes, I've traveled extensively throughout South America, and I was born in Chile. And one of the things that I've observed, and I'm wondering if Hugo Chavez is not taking advantage of it, is, for example, in the United States, when you work for a company, you can start from the bottom rung of the ladder and work your way up and make it to the top. But in South America, what I've seen, it seems like a lot of the companies, a lot of the jobs that are out there, you start at the bottom of the rung of the ladder, but you're not moving up. And 10 years later, you can be doing the same thing, whereas the people that are at the top of the ladder that own the companies, they're very wealthy, and they just keep getting wealthy.
Why is that, Jorge? Is that race? Is it class? Is it aristocracy? Is it history?
I believe it's class. What I've seen from my family, there are different class structures. The way they address the lower class, you would never be able to get away with that in the United States. So that's what I'm wondering about. And also, I've traveled extensively with some Australian business owners, and they observe the same thing. I was wondering if you can expand upon that observation, if that's accurate.
Let us pick up on it, Jorge, and thank you. Daniel Garcia-Pena. Jorge says, why doesn't the bottom move up more effectively in Latin America? Certainly that's something Hugo Chavez speaks to. You know, despite all the free trade talk and more economic talk, do we still have fundamental class issues buried in here?
No doubt. I think that if you look at the last decade, the last few years, what we have seen is that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. The difference between the wealthy and the poor increase in the, and I think the sense of frustration is in fact what Chavez has been able to pick up on. He himself is an example of a because of his race, of his class origin, appeals to those that have felt excluded and been excluded for years, not only in Venezuela but throughout Latin America. So I think that, and if you look at the not only the trade policies but where the U.S. has put its political leverage in the last years, it has been much more on the side of maintaining the establishment, of maintaining those in power, rather than on the side of change. So I think that is a significant reason why many of the Latin American nations and the process that we're seeing throughout Latin America have been able to put together a new hope that through this emphasis in social spending, in poverty reduction policies, like not only Chavez but that are being implemented by Lula in Brazil, by the other leftist leaders throughout the region, are much more in tune with the needs of the vast majorities of Latin Americans.
And yet, Jose Carreño, let me ask you. I mean, we hear people saying there is a new sophistication in Latin America. There's been a lot of economic experimentation. People have watched and learned a lot. There's an appreciation that free markets can push growth, but then there's the kind of a socialist or leftist impulse at the same time to try and get at that deeper poverty. When George Bush speaks about America, the United States, focusing on social issues, how is that heard in Mexico?
That's a very interesting point, because picking up on what was said before, if you realize it, the Bush is going to two of the countries with more unequal distribution of riches or income in the Americas, Brazil and Mexico. Mm. Both of them are countries extremely, extremely unfair. But the problem is that it's also a structural problem. It's not only a problem of class, which counts a lot, but it's also structural. It's a problem of education. It's a problem of access. It's a problem of rigidity in the structures. So when the United States claims somewhat belatedly that those social structures are hurting its own national security, the elites of the region are listening at this point. Maybe not listening willingly, not willingly embracing it, but they are aware that they have no choice, because the alternative is Hugo Chavez or the other ghosts of the left, if you want to put it that way, Evo Morales, etc., on their own backyard. So they have to play a different game, and now it's the United States, the one that is calling them to play that different game.
Let me go to New Haven, Connecticut, and Dory. Hi, Dory, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My comment is, I've only been to South America one time, and that was to the nation of Guyana, which is the only English-speaking country, and it also has a very strong socialist background. I can't remember the name of the very charismatic leader at the moment. But my observation with South American people in general is that there's a very strong family cohesiveness, community cohesiveness. There's a very kind of a very loving nature among South American people, warm, loving nature. And the kind of cutthroat capitalism that the Bush administration has been purveying all over the world is just totally unacceptable in South America.
You're saying, after one visit, that's your read of the culture. Let us pick it up. Peter Hakim, what do you say to Dory's observation?
Let me say, I think that one can go overboard a little bit, this neglect of the social issue. And the fact is that the U.S. agenda, the Washington consensus, has really been not wrong. It's been too narrow. There's no question that countries are not going to solve their economic problems. These are mainly poor or near-poor countries in Latin America. The way poor and near-poor countries emerge from that situation and begin to provide decent lives for their citizens, and we've seen it in Asia, Korea, China, and India now, are growing. Growth is absolutely fundamental. That requires, and it's required almost everywhere, sort of trade openings, market reforms. There's no question that without that, you're not going to have very much in the way of social development. And in fact, the social issues have come to fore in the last 3 or 4 years in a very dramatic way, precisely because the countries are growing once again, and there is an opportunity to develop social programs. And the fact is that in country after country of Latin America, Lula in Brazil, Vasquez in Uruguay, two presidents on the left, Michelle Bachelet and her predecessor Ricardo Lagos in Chile, have really followed very orthodox economic policies, have focused very heavily on producing trade, very importantly on securing foreign investment. There has been no sort of giving that up. In fact, inflation, which is a good measure of of fiscal orthodoxy, is at its lowest point ever in Latin America.
Let me put that
now,
same point.
The problem is not everyone is benefiting. So
right.
You do need robust social programs added to that. But robust social programs without the growth, without the trade opening, without the reforms, are not going to produce very much, unless you have a Venezuela, which is sort of win the lottery theory of development, that you have oil and oil goes to $70 a barrel. You have plenty of money. Mm. You're no longer poor.
You're off
but
to the races.
Let me say at the end of this, I think Venezuela is going to have one more failed government because it's not getting invested in producing jobs and producing a modern economy.
Daniel Garcia Pena, let me put it to you. There has been a lot of experience now with free markets, free trade, globalization. Peter Hakim says, you know, yes, there's concern about social issues, but there's now a fundamental understanding around Latin America that you need the markets. It's no longer sort of between the markets and a kind of a Fidel or Che Guevara view of the world. Do you agree?
Yes, I do. I think the question is not so much whether we need development or not, but who benefits from the development? Where do the resources of that growth go? And I think that is a big difference between, let's say, the right and the left today in Latin America. The example of Lula, I think, is an excellent example. He has been very responsible fiscally, but he has increased the programs to reduce the poverty, to increase education, so that those resources, those benefits of development, go to the more needy. I think that is the big debate. On the contrary, for example, in a country like Colombia, where a right-wing government like the Uribe administration, what you've seen is an increase in the difference between the rich and the poor, a greater concentration of wealth, and a benefits that are more reduced as far as economic terms go to the rest of the people. So I think that is where the debate goes. It's not so much, I don't think anyone really in Latin America is talking about a return to the state-controlled economies other than Chavez, who, as everyone has acknowledges, is not a case that can be repeated. Nobody in Latin America has the oil wealth that Chavez has, and so therefore, even though his rhetoric and his ideas and the form of attacking the United States can be very popular, I think that as a development model goes, there's very little that Chavez can really export.
Jose Carreño, may I ask you to look far south with us for a moment to Argentina? President Bush will be in Uruguay Friday, Saturday, and we're reading that Hugo Chavez plans to be across that wide mouth of the River Plate there in Buenos Aires, leading big anti-American demonstrations with Argentina's president, Néstor Kirchner. What's that about?
Well, you have to realize that we are not mentioning here the dynamic but among Latin American countries. And then you have an Argentina that is in a big quarrel with Uruguay about some paper mills. Mm-hmm. That is a big store in South America, so big that it even has threatened to divide Mercosur. You have also Argentina getting obtaining a lot of economic aid from Venezuela, from President Chavez. And besides, let's not discount Mr. Chavez's money. During the Summit of the Americas, he spent about $500,000 organizing that big meeting that you quoted a while ago. And he has spent more than $5 billion in Argentina in the last couple of years. So there is a reason for him to go to Argentina. There is a reason for Argentina to receive them. Then you have the famous ethanol initiative, where Argentina is not included, for all we know.
This is the big agreement with Brazil.
Yes, but this agreement goes beyond Brazil. Mm. For all I know, this agreement opens the way for an invitation to other countries, producers of corn and sugar cane, including Colombia, possibly Uruguay, Guatemala, and the Caribbean region.
So there's internal tensions you're pointing to that may explain a lot of this. Peter Hakam, go to that ethanol agreement energy for a moment, if you would. We've read that it's partly in order to downplay the value of Chavez's oil in Latin America. But what's being proposed there around ethanol and Brazil and the rest?
Well, number one, I think this has a variety of objectives, the ethanol. But the basic theme is that the U.S. and Brazil are the two great market leaders in producing ethanol together. I think they produce almost three-quarters of the world's production. This has proven to be a very good replacement for oil, particularly for transportation. And the U.S., in its domestic energy policy, Bush has committed the country to increasing production something like 500%. And it makes good logical sense that Brazil and the United States ought to be collaborating. They're going to announce collaboration on things like research and technology, on trying to expand the production of ethanol to a variety of other countries in Latin America to create a real international market for it. This would also be a market for Brazilian expertise and technology. And to really sort of make ethanol a central source of energy, which should benefit all of the tropical countries of Latin America, which are all producers of sugarcane. And sugarcane is a very good source for the ethanol.
Mm-hmm. We've just got half a minute here. Daniel Garcia Pena in Colombia. Is there anything Bush can say beyond what he is saying already that might pump up the popularity as the president goes on this five-nation trip?
No, I don't think that his popularity as a president has much of a chance of improving. But I do think that that the United States as a country can improve its relationship with the region, with the Bush administration in its last leg. But I think with the triumph of the Democrats in Congress, there's a new stage that can open up. And I think that in most Latin America, we don't see this as Chavez versus Bush or Venezuela versus the United States, but Venezuela plus the United States, how to take advantage of both. Because there, I think that nobody today is going to close relationships with the United States. The U.S. continues to be a major player in the world. There's no doubt in Latin America.
Really, and there's the big view. And with that, we're out of time. Daniel Garcia Pena at National University in Bogota, thank you for being with us. Peter Hakam in Washington and Jose Carreño in Washington, thanks to you both. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.